You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, I'm your host, and you're listening to Answers for the Family. This show brings you answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Answers for the Family will address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and international parental abduction. We will introduce you to specialized schools and treatment programs that can really help, as well as new innovations in these areas. With over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate enough to meet and work with some of the top professionals in this field. I will bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. I'm thrilled to have as my guest today two such talented and caring professionals from the Optimum Performance Institute. We have founder and executive director, Dr. Robert Fisher, and Director of Admissions and Marketing, Anne LaRivière.
Hi, Alan.
Hi. Dr. Fisher has more credentials than we have time to talk about. What I will say is that he is a pillar of the psychiatric community with over 30 years' experience. And, as many of you know, alongside any great man is a great woman, and that is the best way to describe Anne. Good morning, you two.
Good morning.
Good morning, Alan.
Hey. It is a beautiful day for all of you listeners. It is a beautiful day. We are looking out from the 36th floor, looking out over Los Angeles, and I just want you guys to know how thankful I am to have you here with me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. I think let's start right now. I know that our listeners have questions. We actually had some questions that were emailed in. So let's start with, what is the Optimum Performance Institute?
Well, I'll start off, Alan. I'd like to say, too, that Anne, in order to facilitate our marriage and moving forward, Anne is a co-founder.
Okay.
Let's get that straight.
Yeah, okay. We'll get that straight.
And so, all
and
right.
So Anne and I have been working together for a long time, and I think the bottom line is my own subspecialty was working with young children. And I had been consulting to what's called a therapeutic boarding school for probably 10 or 11 years. And I noticed that both when I was managing psychiatric hospitals and also in working with therapeutic boarding schools, I felt that one of the most important, absolutely one of the most important things is not necessarily where your child gets help for the initial phases of treatment, which is extremely important. But probably one of the most important prognostic factors or factors that say, how is that young person going to do is directly related to the transition of them back into home, back into community, back into the educational environment, and back, again, becoming a productive member of family and community. So, therefore, what we noticed was that we were working with a number of 17, 18-year-old young men and women, and who had done quite well in the settings where I was. But then I noticed the same thing that we had noticed years before, and that was about the transition. And many of the young men and women that we had been working with were from metropolitan areas from throughout the country and outside the country. Then one of the factors was, logically, what would be the best transition for these young people? And that is why we started the Optimum Performance Institute. We started in Woodland Hills, which we feel is located in a metropolitan area of Los Angeles. Why we felt that that was, at the time, innovative, and I believe still is that I believe we're the only ones in the country who have established a program, a transitional program, in a metropolitan area. And why that is important is that in terms of getting used to all the wonderful assets, all the wonderful things that a metropolitan area has to offer, one needs to live in one. And then also deal with some of the distractions. I think many of the fantasies that parents have throughout the nation is that if you go back to Salt Lake City, or you go back to a smaller community, then in fact you are not subject to those same distractions as you would be to Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And many of our New Englanders who come think of Los Angeles as Sodom or Gomorrah, etc., the end mm-hmm. of the earth, when in fact, in reality, there's a lot to offer. And we have young people who are gifted, who are talented. And we believe that. Alan, yes.
Yeah. Well, what I was going to do, now that you've established the co-founder part, and excuse me on that part, and I'd like to ask Ann this question, and that is, what has changed? And again, for those that don't know, I've known Bob Fisher for 30 years. Uh-huh. So when he mentioned about working with adolescents, I was right there with him. So
I know.
So I'm very familiar with that part. But what has changed now? And again, I'll ask Anne, what has changed over the 20, 30 years? Why there is more of a focus or an importance for these 17 to 25 year olds today?
Well, I think that there's more and more of a need for support at this age. You know, Alan, years and years ago, even back in the 60s. 75% of young people had already met all the markers for adulthood by the time they were 30. Markers meaning getting married, mm-hmm. having a job, having their education completed, maybe even having children. Now, it's less than half that number. And there's a lot of reasons, and I'm not the expert to explain why that is, but there's just a lot of reasons why more and more young adults are staying home longer now than ever mm-hmm. before. Young adults are having more difficulty finding a passion that they're excited about in life. They're having more difficulty feeling like they are going to be able to do better than their parents. Mm-hmm. And of course, financially, it's a difficult situation today. So I think there's just more and more young adults who are struggling at this age and need a place where they can make a transition.
Mm-hmm. Bob, as the psychiatrist, is this more of a psychiatric issue or more of a sociological issue?
Well, that's very interesting because I think in some ways it's arbitrary to divide that. I think clearly there is a very, very large psychological component or sociologic component. I think that is a tremendous issue. Our own program mm-hmm. is such that we get complex young people from throughout the country. So I think the bottom line is, I think sociologically, I think most people now, from a sociologic point of view, even have redefined adolescence. Mm-hmm. As an example, I think many, many people in the field of sociology, psychology would say that adolescence, the later portion of adolescence now extends from 17 to 25.
Wow.
Major change.
Okay, well, now there's also people that will say adolescence now, because of how much information is being given to children, that it's starting at 11. Is it just widening on both ends?
Well, there used to be three stages of development, childhood, adolescence, and adulthood.
Correct.
Now, even in psychology books, textbooks today, it's childhood, adolescence, late adolescence, that it was actually a whole stage now, and
right.
adulthood.
Right. And so, then there's some of us that just never really got beyond adolescence.
Some of us have never grown up. That's right.
Well, in terms of the complexity, I think the main thing is, I think your point is well taken, meaning at 10 or 11, young people 10 or 11 are exposed to things that neither you nor I were exposed to at the age
exactly.
of 10 or 11. And so it's very peculiar that the exposure to things, complex things, such as sexuality, such as love, such as a need to perform in a world that is extremely competitive. You're not only competing against other young men and women here in the U.S., you're competing on a global level, which has an effect.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, all of these factors are present, but yet what we see psychologically is that, in a sense, a lot of our young people are ill-prepared to move forward and really deal with the anxiety associated with the complexity of making decisions. Meaning that the decision that I had was, you're going to go to school, period. That was that was about right. the decision. Now it's like you're going to go to school. Where are you going to go to school? Parents in general in the group that we deal with become very, very involved, in the choice of school, choice of grammar school, etc. My parents came from Eastern Europe, so they had no idea what was going on. So what that did was one develops a self-reliance. And one of the complexities now is working from a point of view of wanting to help their children. Many, many parents are exceedingly involved. And so what we see now is, on one level, young people who are in many ways oh so sophisticated in terms of knowledge, but yet the experience of being able to make their own decisions. Probably the most important thing is understanding what failure means. That the process of growth is we move forward and then we take a step back.
Okay, so are you saying then some of these parents are actually stunting their child's independent growth or their growth towards being interdependent?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And this is quite unconscious. Quite unconscious on the part of the parents. And the pressure on the parents is such that they understand what a competitive international world we're in. And they want their children to have what they have, etc.
And more.
Mm-hmm. And more. And more. And that is another very, very big issue.
As parents always have.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
This is true. And this may be one of the first times in the U.S. where the children may not have as much as the parents. And because you achieve a college degree, that may or may not ensure you the opportunity to get a good job or a good paying job, etc., etc. So psychologically, one of the things that we're seeing is that when there's a downturn, that if the normal course for all of us is periods of ups and downs to achieve longer term goals, this group, from what we see, are ill prepared. Because as soon as there is a downturn, as soon as there's a difficulty, that young person interprets it in one of two ways. Either they're dumb or they're not competent, or what they've engaged in is not right for them. And in fact, both are not true. That the ability to persevere, to stick with something, is a quality that we talk about and try our best to cultivate within our individuals.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask Anne, how is the parent then of this, I guess we'd call it extended adolescent.
Young adult.
Uh-huh. Young adult. Mm-hmm. How are they going to identify this now? Because we're having a downturn in our entire culture. Mm-hmm. I mean, from a financial standpoint, mm-hmm. how is the parent going to identify this and know that it's time to contact you?
Because things aren't working. And
well, what are some examples?
And it's pretty good, pretty obvious. Oh, some examples. The young adult decides to stay at home and stay in their room and lock themselves onto the computer and not come down during the day, but forge around for food at night and then crawl back up into the room and get on the computer.
Mm-hmm.
Isolation, being unhappy. I mean, it's pretty obvious. Everybody knows when their young adult is or their child is unhappy. And parents at this stage often are at a point where they recognize that it's not that they have to stop pushing or they have to stop trying to encourage them to get into the best school or to the best. They're really at a point where it's just like just be happy. If we could all just be happy. But at that point, the young adult recognizes that there's a lot at stake, and it's overwhelming, and so everybody needs help at that point.
Now, you guys are providing some of the psychiatric treatment, but at the same time, are they learning a trade? They're getting training that allows them to go out and work in society?
We basically, we're a therapeutic residential program for young adults 17 to 25. And so basically, we take a young adult where they're at, where they are when they come into us, where they're at, and we move forward with them. And so a lot of our young adults are going to college. Some of them, and when we're very small, we have about between 25 and 30 young adults in our phase one and phase two. So some of them are going to college. We have some who need to finish high school. And we have some who want to do vocational training. We have, so basically we take them from where they're at, and then we integrate them into our program. So no two young adults are doing exactly the same thing.
Well, in fact, I was just going to say that it sounds like there's not a typical OPI participant.
I think that that's true. And that is very difficult to communicate, because in our day and age, understandably, they being our referral sources, and we're quite pleased and lucky that I think probably 95% of the young people who come to us are referred by professionals, people who are in the field. But even many of those people want to know who we treat. And where we're unique is this. OPI was based on an underlying philosophy, and since we know each other for 30 years, Alan, I'll let it out here.
There you go.
The philosophy is, simply put, that whatever your distraction is to move forward in life, whether it is an Asperger's disorder, whether it is a substance abuse, whether it is bipolar, whether it is anxiety and fears of moving on, whether it is a complex relationship with a family.
Depression.
Depression. So the point is, what we've been able to establish, and I'm pleased to say, is a community in which it's quite beautiful, really, because we have young people. We have young people helping each other. And the premise is, whatever you have going on, we're all the same in that all of us wish love. All of us wish to move forward with our lives. And whether the distraction is a use of marijuana to attempt to allow you to contain your anxiety, whether it is a social awkwardness that you've had really since early childhood, whether it is a mood fluctuation, whether you need to take medications or not take medications. I think the beauty of OPI is we really don't discriminate by diagnosis, because we don't feel it's really meaningful. And we have been able to demonstrate that. I think the three touchstone words at OPI are, which we did some videos and the kids have actually picked it up, it's patience, tolerance, and compassion. And those
I
are
like
the
that.
Three things that we try. We talk about in groups all the time. So the point is, all of us want to be loved, and all of us wish to be successful. The issue is, what are your distractions? So when we identify it, we have groups in which all of our groups are mixed, male, female, from all over the country, from outside the country, and we have established a community in which people want to help people, and it's quite beautiful. And the main thing is, it's working. It's actually working.
Exactly. And it sounds like you're taking away some of the tags. In
Absolutely.
Other words, you know, some of these kids are coming into a situation to where, you know, they've been tagged
right.
something. And,
right.
and I think you're wiping that away mm-hmm. and kind of giving them a fresh start. Mm-hmm. And I think that's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. And I think one of the unique things that we have is being a psychiatrist, or as the kids would call it, a shrink, particularly a Southern California shrink, who is on the scope of shrinks, I guess, more open supposedly than my East Coast colleagues, so I hear. But the bottom line is this. We don't judge what therapeutic modality. And one of the main things at OPI is to look for bridges, because the intention is to establish a bridge for that young person to relate to the world, to relate to other people. So therefore, we have a staff that is departmentalized, meaning it can be equally as important for a young man to engage in Taekwondo as it is to engage in individual psychotherapy. And we've been doing it for so long that I am not naive enough to believe that my brilliant interpretation is going to be the key, you see. Because sometimes it's a Taekwondo. Sometimes it is a communication with one of our staffs who drive the young person, and that staff is a loving, kind person and establishes a bridge that young person needs. We have an interesting mentorship, and I'm very pleased about this. We have a mentor who is a Nobel laureate. And
wow.
we also, in physics, no less. And we have a young man who could speak that language and benefit from it. We also have mentors in the field of vocations, an electrician, a plumber.
Drummers.
We're
5-time Grammy nominated drummer.
Yes, we're chock full of musicians, as Alan knows, I'm one.
Yeah.
And so, but the point is, we have young people in acting. So the point is this, that is one of the benefits. One of the wonderful benefits of being in a metropolitan area. We have a young man who's recently studying the tar, an instrument I've never heard of, and he may be listening. And so it's a Persian instrument. And here's a beautiful young man who speaks fluent Farsi and studies the tar. And so why I say that is it's an opportunity for growth. And we think if the process works, we all grow. I grow as a human being, as do the staff, as do the young people.
Well, speaking of growth, and let's talk about accomplishments. One of the things that I get as I'm hearing both of you is you're so proud of this. I mean, I can see it. I mean, I know it, but for those of you, if you can't see it, hear it. They're incredibly proud of these are their kids and the things that they've done. Share with our listeners what some of the accomplishments of some of the graduates.
Some of them have gone back to school, gone mm-hmm. back to college. Some of them have gone to college for the first time. It depends on what their interests are. We had a young woman, for instance, who came in, and her father was really very insistent and very hopeful that she would go to college. As she progressed through OPI, she was able to voice, and who knows what she'll end up doing, but she absolutely did not want to go to college. And she wanted to become a hairdresser. And that was a big pill for the parents to swallow. And but they did, to their credit, and she is back in New York, and she has she's starting her own business, and she's doing very well. And I think that saying that the kids have gone back to college, have gone into finished high school.
I have
left their bedroom.
They've left their bedroom.
and become balanced, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're not so much about success as far as what school are you going to or where did you get in, but are you happy?
Right.
And are you starting to move forward with your dreams and your passions and your interests?
Well, and I agree. And when you mention the hairdresser, hey, there's some great artistic people that are fabulous hairdressers.
Of course.
Now, if that same person goes to a good business school, and as you said, if they're opening up their own shop, if that's what makes them happy.
And we had a young woman who came to us, and she was a wonderful artist, but she was determined to be an actress, and she was really, really a wonderful actress. And so she went to acting school. We have people in the film industry and she went to study, and we drive people everywhere, so every day she went to film school, acting school, and she lasted for a couple of months in it, and then she came back and she said, you know what, I just don't want to do this anymore. I don't like it. It's way too much work. And I want to go back to acting. I mean, I'm sorry, back to painting.
Right.
And so she did, and she's now in art school in Texas, but she got it out of her system, you know, this fantasy for her that, and she was really good. We were sorry that she didn't really want to, but at least she found out.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, too, that I think the most surprising thing is what the young people tell us, what they've discovered.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a young man who was a champion swimmer from the East Coast, etc., a very physical guy. And turns out he went and he got certification at a school of cooking. And he was going to be a chef. Then he realized standing on your feet in a hot kitchen is not exactly what he wanted. So he made a transition and now is completing a school of massage therapy. And which is quite wonderful because he's doing something he enjoys, he can earn a living at it, and parents are exceedingly pleased. We have another young man, very gifted, I can identify with him, a drummer, who if Jeff is listening, who is a drummer, a good friend. And the funny thing is he became practical, meaning it's not so easy to earn a living as a musician. Turns out technologically he's very savvy. And what he is doing now is he has a two-bedroom. One of his bedrooms is a recording studio. So I've learned a lot about the music industry through him in that you don't immediately go to press CDs, and I call them LPs, but you don't press CDs. You actually put them on the net for iTunes.
Right.
And through the net, that's a way of exploring, do you have a hit, do you not, how many hits do you get? So, but the point is, he's recording now, and he's in the recording industry.
Mm-hmm.
And he's quite pleased about that. And we've had people go ahead and pursue careers in acting. A young man whose mentor is a Nobel laureate in physics changed his major to do a dual major in physics and math, and he's doing it. He's doing it. So, I think the main thing is to establish a balance and to establish happiness. And I'll share this with you. One of the most interesting things is at this stage of the game, I would say most parents have changed. Most parents have changed, meaning the push to go to a particular school, to do a particular thing, is no longer the issue. What they want for their children is please be happy and take care of yourself. And frankly, what we find is, as all of us in childhood are kind of subject to the wishes and promptings and fantasies of our parents, it's hard for them to let go. Mm-hmm. And many of our young people feel like when we say, it's not important what school you go to, what is important is that you set a goal for yourself. You learn to achieve long-term goals and set objectives. Their interpretation is, so you think I'm dumb, you see, or you have no faith in me. And what we find is, at this stage, parents have moved forward, and through therapy and through understanding and patience and tolerance, these young people learn to reassess value. That what really is important is to really find love and to find a balance in your life and do something. Do something that's meaningful for you.
That's great. And I don't want to be remiss here. I want to make sure that everybody knows how to get a hold of you. Can you please give them your phone number and your email address?
Okay. The toll-free number is 888-558-0617. 888-558-0617. And our website is www.opiliving.com. So it's opiliving.com. OPI stands for Optimum Performance Institute.
Right. And if any of you out there have trouble reaching them, you can also go to the Answers for the Family website. That's answers, the numeral for the family.com. Go to the website. This show will be posted within about 24 hours. You can download it. You can listen to it again. You know, it will be there for you. If you have any questions, you can also put questions on there. We will get the questions to Bob and Ann, and we will get answers to you next week. And with that, we're going to take a little break.
Listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza.
Alan Cardoza.
Only on LA Talk Radio.
Irresistible to me, what can I say?
listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza.
Alan Cardoza.
Only on LA Talk Radio.
We are back, and I want to jump right into some questions that we had gotten. I just started the last couple of weeks with the press release where we are asking for questions ahead of time. So fortunately, we got a few. And one of those questions was, what is a typical day for your participants?
And well, a typical day. Let me just start by saying that when a participant comes in, they fill out a questionnaire ahead of time, and it asks some questions like, what do you see yourself doing in a year, in 3 years, in 5 years? What are your passions? What are your interests? What are your goals? Even if they don't have a clue what to put down, they put something down. They write something down. And it gets them started thinking, okay, I guess this is where I'm going to start figuring out what I'm going to do with myself. So let's say, and they have to list three goals. So let's say one of their goals is to finish high school. Another goal might be to start taking some college classes. Another goal might be to learn a martial art. Let's just say that for now. And so they come in, and we list those goals, and they live in apartments with other young, if it's a boy, they live in apartments with other young men. Young females live in apartments with females, large three-bedroom apartments. And they get up in the morning, and the staff, there's in phase one, there's staff there during the day, and there's staff at night. There's a curfew. So they get up in the morning, and they start their day, and they jump in the van, and if their goal is, say, to go to school or finish high school or get a job or whatever, we drive them to where they're going to be going to their job, and then we bring them back. And their personal program is integrated into OPI program, which means there are at least a minimum of 2 to 3 therapy groups a week. There's individual therapy. There's a heck of a lot of activities. We have a director of education who will help them figuring out their schooling, what they're going to go to. We have a director of volunteer services who helps them go to volunteer activities. We have a director of substance abuse, so if they have a substance abuse issue, they come back and they deal with that. So really their typical day is an integration of their individual interests and our program.
Gotcha. And Bob, how much of their time would you say is psychotherapy? And it sounds like, after what Ann just said, it's not going to be the same for everybody. But, if you have a professional out there looking at a particular child and thinking, wow, I don't know if they're a good fit or not, what can you tell them to where they can hear that and say, yeah, that makes Johnny a good fit?
I think in terms of the psychotherapy, we divide it into subspecialized modules, meaning there is group psychotherapy, which is basically twice a week. There are 4 groups, and we ask that each participant attend 2. There are subspecialized groups, of which, again, there is one for social skills development, which is integrated, because we find that those who are more adept at social skills can help those that are not, but that's basically the focus of it. And then chemical dependency. We have in-house groups as well as out-of-house. And I think the mitigating factor is that we differentiate between counseling and therapy. All our staff are equipped to do a counseling. And the counseling is done through the context of goals defined within a behavioral system. So from our vantage point, we hope that every interaction is of a therapeutic nature, meaning the person who is driving them even has an idea of what they're dealing with. Clearly, our independent living specialists work with them based on a defined treatment objective. And then we have individual psychotherapy. Individual psychotherapy is optional, and we have young people who are in individual psychotherapy by choice. Anywhere from once a week to sometimes 3 times a week. And so I think the variables are somebody in need of more intensive treatment is able to do so by more intensive engagement with their psychotherapist, who basically are individuals with many years of experience, many, many years.
Okay, and then that said, how much would you consider is life training?
Oh, gosh, the whole program.
it's all about life training.
Because they're living with peers. They are interacting with our young staff. They learn how to balance a checkbook. They learn how to cook Sunday evenings, for instance, in each apartment. The young adults in that apartment sit down with the staff, and they figure out what they're going to eat for the week. So they go grocery shopping. Most of them have never done that before. And they come back, and they learn how to make simple things that you would make if you were a young adult and you were in college. When we first started OPI, my fantasy was that we were all going to sit down at 8 o'clock or at 7 o'clock and have dinner and have it just be one big family. And that lasted like about 3 days because everybody's doing so many different things. They might be going to a 12-step meeting. They might have a class to take. They might have a job. So it's real life. So everybody learns how to integrate the cooking and how that becomes part of it. They have an allowance, and they learn that, you know, if they spend the whole allowance at the beginning of the week on a couple of DVDs, then Saturday when everybody goes to Magic Mountain, they're just going to be stuck. So it doesn't take long before you figure out how to manage your money. So the whole program is geared toward helping somebody learn how to live in the real world.
You know, I should say, too, there's a structured approach, too, meaning there is a format, meaning a behavioral format in which we say you have to construct your own schedule. So therefore, by doing that, you learn a lot. You learn a lot in terms of prioritization, how much time you have, a balance in wanting to have fun and wanting to do what you need to do. In the second phase, young people have cars. So you need to take care of the car. You need to get your insurance. You need to be responsible. So every morning, literally, there is a meeting in which you review the objectives that you're going to go through that day to achieve your goal. So that in and of itself is quite structured. And then, of course, we've worked with kids who've been severely traumatized, meaning you have to do your own laundry. And for many from the East Coast, I won't belabor Manhattan, but it was a traumatic experience. And so whatever the trauma be, I joke, but yet things like, I expect you to clean up your own space. Mm-hmm. I expect you to participate with a group in maintaining the cleanliness of your apartment. I expect that you will go ahead and either cook your own meals, let us teach you, or find a way to deal with it. I expect you to eat a reasonably healthy, balanced diet, even though many don't. We're in the position of saying it's not wise. And hopefully through multiple interactions, they get the message, that it's not so great.
Well, and I would think they would also get it through peer pressure as well.
Absolutely.
If most of the kids in that house are eating well, it shines a negative light on them that they probably don't want if they're the only one that's eating the junk
absolutely.
Food.
Absolutely. We have some young adult. We have had a mother just yesterday call me and say that her daughter's a vegetarian. How would that work? And of course, it would work fine. And we have vegetarians because they're part of the decision making process as to what foods they're going to buy and how they're going to eat it. And then the others learn. But of course, one night a week is eat out night. Mm-hmm. One night a week is bring food in night. They have lots of opportunities for that.
I think the objective is, as many of the parents, so we share the same point of view in eating healthy. However, at the age of 18 and 19, somebody has to conclude that it is in their best interests. So, therefore, if we replicate the same struggle that they had with their parents, it's simply not productive. Meaning you have to figure out that if there's a guy who is lifting weights or a young woman who we've had involved in different types of yoga, and be aware of their diet, and that we will help you to change your diet. But it's that facilitation of change, and I think, Alan, you really hit it. It's the peer group. Mm-hmm. It is absolutely the peer group. I think that is more potent than any psychotherapist, mm-hmm. more potent than any parent, because at this age, if that individual peer says, you seem kind of down, what's up? I think there's a high probability they'll share. And if that peer themselves has some insight as to anxiety management, as to depression, mm-hmm. as to the need to be loved, and that we all share that, very helpful. So I feel very pleased that we actually have a community now. We have what we call peer mentors. We have young people who have been out of OPI for a year or two, who continue to come back, who continue to co-lead groups, who continue to serve as mentors for other people, which for us is the essence of OPI. It's people helping people.
I was going to say that walks right into one of my next questions, which will be aftercare, but we can come back to that. What do you have?
Well, I was just saying that on our website we have some interviews with young adults, and I'm always struck by how they often say the same thing, and that is, I had to get it myself. In other words, OPI is a place where they take ownership of growing up. And, you know, they're so used to having other people saying, do this, do that, why didn't you do this, why didn't you do that, if you don't do this, this is going to happen. And there's a huge incentive at OPI. You just have to. You have to start doing things yourself. For instance, Altisa is our director of career services. She will come up. Somebody says they want a job, so she'll come up with three or four job opportunities for them. They'll sit down. She'll help them write their resumes. And then she'll give it to them to follow through. The next day she'll call up. Did you call? No, I haven't called. Well, you need to call so-and-so. You need to call so-and-so. In other words, she's not going to do it for them. And eventually they learn, this is my life.
Well, and I like that, because what I'm getting out of it is that, A, she's not doing it for them.
Exactly.
B, she's making them accountable for it. And I think the part maybe a lot of people don't see is that the overall structure of getting them to that point, when they go back and tell their friends, it was their idea.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
In other words, you know, it put them in a structure to where they made the right decision, mm-hmm. which I think builds the self-esteem they need mm-hmm. to then move on.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I love that. Yeah, that's great. But that's what where you were headed reminded me that one of the questions that we came in had to do with aftercare. Mm-hmm. So how do you address aftercare? And you were just starting to say, apparently you've got a lot of the other kids that have graduated that now are mentoring some of the kids?
Yeah, we have aftercare. There is technically aftercare is defined as a step down level of our phases. It's phase mm-hmm. one and two, and it's at a different billing rate because they no longer live in an apartment that we provide. So therefore, they provide their own apartment, they provide their own food.
We help them find it.
Right.
And, you know, we help them find it, and that process of finding an apartment, of being responsible for the signing of your own lease, and, you know, that bills will not be paid through the beneficence of God. You actually have to pay the bills. Otherwise, you have no telephone, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. What I hear is they're sort of being weaned off.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And in that phase, we still provide transportation, group support. The point is, we provide a supportive community at a lesser level of supervision. And so that is the aftercare phase. Then we actually have outpatient, which is very cool, because then we have some young people who are living in different parts of Los Angeles who come back. And they come back with the intention of co-leading a group, of giving back to other peers. And that we find extremely helpful. And it's very pleasing, because we all work hard. And to see somebody come back and want to give back, I think that's the essence of it.
Yeah. Is there sort of an average length of stay? I mean, what I'm hearing is that it's individualized, so it's going to change. But is there kind of an average?
Well, there is a definite length of minimum stay of 6 months.
Okay.
And so ideally the first 3 months is phase one, the second 3 months is phase two. I say ideally because sometimes at the end of the first 3 months that young adult doesn't want to move into phase two. They like their roommates, they like the staff, they're happy, and then sometimes they can't wait to move into phase two because phase two, we lessen the supervision. But the staff, the treatment team, the family, because the family is in constant contact with the therapist at all, you know, at least once mm-hmm. a week, or sometimes parents don't want to be that much, but can be. And so everybody agrees they're not ready to move into phase two yet. It's not appropriate. But it's a minimum 6 month stay, and then after that, there's aftercare in 2 month increments.
Yeah, and I think statistically,
the average is about 10 months.
9 to 10 months uh-huh. is average, okay. And then within that spectrum, it's highly individualized. Meaning, if you have somebody who who's 20, let's say. Mm-hmm. And unable to leave their apartment in the Bay Area for 2 years because they feel awkward. Well, the amount of time it's going to take that individual to really be able to go out into the world generally is longer than 10 months. And
Yeah, no, I was saying, and yeah. But it's, and it sounds like, I mean, that person's dealing with different issues or may have a different diagnosis coming into it. Are there any particular diagnoses that are a good fit, or maybe a better question is there any that aren't a good fit?
Yeah, I think this has been a really big issue, because most programs today in a world of subspecialization will list all the diagnoses. And I just need to say that I think in terms of what we offer a tremendous spectrum of fairly sophisticated, I think, therapeutic modalities. Everything from individual psychotherapy to DBT to EEG, biofeedback, yoga, etc., and group psychotherapies. So, therefore, I think there are two diagnoses that we say are exclusionary, and that is a diagnosis of a borderline personality. And the basis is we find with the available structure and supervision that we have, we're just unsuccessful with that group of individuals.
Well, for some of our listeners that may not know, explain what that is.
I wish I could, Alan. But being a psychiatrist, I will give you an attempt. Okay. First of all, the hallmarks basically are it has more to do with one's personality.
It's a diagnosis.
It's a diagnosis in a DSM-4. And the issue is how do you distinguish that? What are the hallmarks? That I think basically there are periods of time for that individual in which their judgment is really quite impaired. And clearly they have a tremendous amount of anxiety. And the manner in which they handle their anxiety is such that it is very difficult for them to talk it out and find a compromised position. And without being able to find a compromised position, meaning when there's an altercation, it's either the high road or, I'm not going to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, many of those individuals at different points in treatment will need a higher level of supervision so that their continuity of care is maintained. And so very basically, I hedge on this because even the term borderline diagnosis or borderline personality, I think if you ask many different people, you'll get many different diagnoses. But I think the hallmarks are, from my vantage point, the newest touted treatment modality is DBT. It's a form of treatment, basically a variation of cognitive types of treatment, which is helpful. However, I think from our vantage point, there will be periods of time that a greater level of external supervision is necessary when that person may become so distraught that the kind of behavioral system and milieu that we have is insufficient to permit them to contain their anxiety. And then the term is acting out. And they act out in such ways that they would need to be shifted to a facility that can contain them. So therefore, their treatment is characterized by a longer-term approach.
Right. So they're just a better fit, really, probably in a longer-term treatment program or something maybe more secure.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, believe it or not, we are almost out of time.
Oh, my gosh.
I glanced over and I went, I can't hardly believe this is already here. So real quick, one more time, can we get the phone number and?
Absolutely. It's 888-558-0617, and the website is www.opiliving.com.
And will you come back? Because I'm sure there's a lot more that we can do. I'd love to have you come back because there's even a couple more questions that were emailed in that I couldn't even get to.
Okay.
Well, it would be a privilege to do it, and so your viewers know after 30 years, it's still great, Alan, with you.
Thank you so much. And everybody out there, this is Answers for the Family. That is Answers, the numeral 4, thefamily.com. And you can go to the site. You can listen to this show again or any other prior show. You can listen to it. You can download it. I thank you all for listening, and we will look forward to you hearing us again in 1 week. Bye now.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza.
Alan Cardoza.
Only on LA Talk Radio.
all about.